you know, disclosures that ultimately brought down the leadership of the DNC, and that, you know, that was months of documents that then became public. And so, you know, why the FBI did not escalate that sooner, and why the formal investigation was not announced, and why it was not attributed to Russia earlier than October, which was the first time that the federal government actually formally attributed it. Those are all important questions that we still don't have answers to.
And we're going to have to leave it there. But of course, we'll continue to look at all of these issues. We want to thank Eric Lipton, Pulitzer Prize winning journalist with The New York Times, and Marcy Wheeler, independent journalist who covers national security. Her website, emptywheel.net. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
K-Boo Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Thirsty City, a monthly beat and rap night at The No in Portland. On Saturday, April 1st, Thirsty City hosts Los Angeles-based Future Funk aficionados Devin Hu and Zachy Force, along with Thodo Lane and Wood Ox. The homie Northern Draw will also be DJing. Again, that's Thirsty City at The No, 3728 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. This is a 21 and up thing, so don't bring your kids. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This program has been made possible by KBOO members in a grant from Portland 5, presenting an evening with Basim Youssef, dubbed the John Stewart of the Arab world, who became the creator and host of the first political satire show in the Middle East. Tickets for this all-ages event with Basim Youssef on Monday, April 3rd at Newmark Theater are available now at portland5.com.
Just let me hear some of that rock and roll music, any old way you choose it. It's got a backbeat, you can't lose it, any old time you use it. It's gotta be rock and roll music if you wanna dance with me. If you wanna dance with me, I have no kick against modern jazz, unless they try to play it too darn fast and change the beauty of the melody until it sounds just like a symphony. That's why I go for that rock and roll music, any old way you choose it.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning. I just want to say Chuck Berry really influenced me in a positive way when I was in high school.
Uh-huh.
And afterward.
Uh-huh.
And I actually went
to the early
to see
days of recorded music.
No, but I really appreciated him, and I think that it's very sad that he's gone.
Oh, the guy was brilliant.
Absolutely brilliant.
Literally influenced most of what came to be known as rock and roll.
Well, yeah, and he brought together all the elements of the kind of folk cultures of America.
Yeah, he did. He basically set the table for white people to appropriate everything he did.
Unfortunately, that's more true than not. Okay, anyway, So this show is not dedicated to, but acknowledging the importance and power of Chuck Berry.
Of Chuck Berry, yeah. Apologies for my voice. I've either got some microbes colonizing my respiratory system, or I'm channeling Barry White. It's one of the two.
How weird.
Yeah.
The Barry White part.
I hope that it's Barry White and not the microbes. That's what I'm hoping.
I can hear it.
So welcome to the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show.
It's a very smooth show today.
Well, it's not. It's not really.
Okay, what
it's
are we
really
doing?
You know, I've been searching around for an appropriate metaphor or simile to describe what's happening to our fair republic right now, and I really can't come up with one.
Well, is it a metaphor or simile?
Well, see, that's just it. I know. Are we a car that has lost its wheels and somebody's under the hood throwing out parts as we go down the road? See, it gets just all falls apart.
All messy. Very messy.
It gets all messy. But it's bad, folks. It is bad. In the last couple of weeks, we've seen the release of the GOP's health care bill. I can sum that up as follows. A bunch of people are going to die. That's my summation of the GOP healthcare bill. Yeah, a bunch of people are going to die.
A lot of other people are going to go into debt. Don't forget that part.
Right, a lot of people are going to go into crushing debt and then die. And then Trump released at least what passes for a budget, although Paul Krugman characterized it as a piece of campaign propaganda masquerading as a budget.
Yes, and not doing a very good job of that.
Which is staggering in its callousness, in its short-sightedness, in its friendship to unbridled capitalism,
and its phoniness,
and its phoniness,
yeah.
And we're going to go into that a little bit further. But see, this is the problem now, trying to comment on a life in the Trump era. Because we talked about, you know, doing this show and talking about his budget, about his health care bill. But that was before that FBI director appeared before Congress yesterday and revealed that the administration has been under investigation since July for colluding with a hostile foreign power to influence the outcome of our election. So, you know, it's just basically pick your disaster when you want to talk
well,
about
why did,
Donald
why
Trump's
did,
America.
Why, I've always hated the FBI.
Yeah, well, I know you have.
I've had hassles with them. I consider them to be the precursor to absolute totalitarianism. J. Edgar Hoover was a fascist pig, and so on.
Cross-dressing fascist pig.
Right. But we don't criticize cross-dressing.
No, we don't.
He was
a trailblazer.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, well, in that sense, he was a very progressive
man.
Yes,
very much.
But, and I think this is really the case, all the establishment of the intelligence community is quite clear on this. There has been, for quite a while now, an invasion by the Russians, which has chosen to dominate or manipulate, I think manipulate is probably the better word, the Republican Party.
Yes.
Which is weird and scary. And going to lead to all kinds of trouble. But I want to say one thing before we get into this so much. Be wary of trying to get rid of Trump.
Why is that?
Because Trump gone is Pence powerful.
You know, I never thought I would actually say this, let alone on the record in front of dozens of listeners.
Yeah, all 12.
But I will take Mike Pence, conservative, Bible-thumping Mike Pence, in a heartbeat.
Boy, yeah, that's because you're not a woman.
No, I'm not.
And you realize what Pence is about.
I realize what Pence is about. And again, I'll quote, as I did a couple weeks ago, Dan Savage on the subject. He says, yes, Pence is awful, but he oscillates in a predictable band of Republican awfulness.
That's true.
You know, he's predictable.
Savage is a bright man. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, but I would prefer him at this point. I mean, look at this guy, Joe. He's a dumpster fire. Everything he does.
But it's contained within the dumpster of crazy.
Is it? Have you looked at his budget?
Yes, it is crazy.
Have you looked at the health care bill that he's going to sign?
Well, and that's insane. The health care bill is so insane. It's so obvious that what the Obama bill did, despite the stupidity of Congress and the too gentleness of Obama, despite all that, it was the only way we could build a better health care program given that we don't have universal coverage.
Yeah, this is true. And we'll get into a little bit later about why that's so. But I want to point out that you might be thinking out there, well, it's not Trump's health care bill. It's the GOP Congress's health care bill. Yes, that's true. But what we need to remember here is that the persona of Donald Trump in the White House essentially means a rubber stamp for the wildest conservative fantasies of the GOP Congress to be enacted into law. Whatever they give to him, he's going to sign. And just look at what they're willing to give to him. 10 million people out of health insurance by 2018.
Yeah.
24 million in a few more years after that.
Yeah.
Escalating costs for the elderly.
Yeah.
For the poor.
Yeah.
And a huge transfer of wealth upward to the very wealthiest among us.
Yeah, but that's been a pattern forever in America.
Well, it absolutely has been, yes. But it just goes to show every time that inroads are made against them, however inadequate, such as Obamacare, conservatives quickly, whenever given the opportunity, act to reverse them. Not only just to reverse them, but to stick it to the poor and vulnerable even harder than they had it before.
Yeah.
And I seriously think that's a component of most everything that this Congress in particular does. Their motivation is to humiliate and stick it to the poor. Not just to enact something that is fiscally conservative, but to punish people, to punish and humiliate people. And
why,
I honestly
why
believe
do they
that
want
is
to punish
true.
And humiliate? Why?
Because they're big. See, conservatives complain about the spending of government on people, right? They say it robs people of their incentive to do well.
Well, they also want to destroy the public lands. They want to.
All sorts of things. But see, here's the deal. They don't care about government spending. They just care about government spending on the wrong people, on the poors and on the browns and on the blacks. That's who they don't want the government to spend resources on. In fact, they want to punish those people to the extent possible.
Just because they exist.
Just because they exist. And I have to wonder, maybe in the dark watches of the night.
Oh, that's good. I want to hold on to that. That's dark watches of the night.
That's Tolkien. Okay. But that's all right.
Tolkien?
Yeah, that was a little nerd reveal on my part.
Okay, that is a nerd reveal for sure.
I wonder, in the dark watches of the night, if Republicans in Congress wouldn't be happier if poor folks just died because they didn't have access
to
care.
No, but who's going to wash the dishes? Who's going to clean the toilets?
Yeah, well, there's the rub.
Who's going to pick the fruit?
Yeah. So it's not just fiscal conservatism. It's not just adherence to ideology. I think there's a genuine motivation to punish a segment of society for not being like the majority of the society.
Well, I think it goes beyond that. I think they have a social Darwinist view. That is to say that the system reveals who the good and the righteous are by showing their material success.
Yes.
And everybody else is obviously screwed up.
That's an old Calvinist doctrine.
It is an old. Yeah. Well, no, that's a perversion of Calvinism. But okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, God is showing his favor upon the wealthy, because surely they would not be wealthy without the favor of God.
Obviously.
Right? It's a nice closed little circle, isn't it?
It is.
All just nice and neat.
Yeah.
Yeah, something must be wrong with you because you're poor. If God loved you, then you wouldn't be poor. Right? Isn't that in a nutshell what...
It sort of is, but then there's Job. I don't want to talk Bible.
All right.
We don't want to talk Bible.
503-231-8187 is the number to call. This is Abe and Joe Talk Radio Program. You can also reach us in writing if you want, facebook.com/Abe and Joe. That's a good way to get your thoughts in if the phone lines are jammed up. You can also tweet at us. Tweet.
Tweet.
At HonestAbe72.
Let's Rock go. And Robin. Tweet, tweet.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. Let's go to the phones. Who do we have? Greg. Good morning.
What's happening, guys?
How you doing?
Good, man. I know you guys getting all fired up this morning. Do you have any action that we can do in our communities to start moving forward, getting rid of this guy?
Well, that's a problem because in terms of getting rid of him, we don't have a legal procedure for that. We have a constitutional procedure for that, impeachment. And that has to originate in the House of Representatives. And I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon.
No, I think that no matter how crooked and bizarre and weird, really weird, his having Russian prostitutes pee on him. I mean, that's weird.
Yeah, that's weird. We don't criticize
it. It doesn't matter. It's private.
No, we don't pass judgment on that.
No, certainly not.
Whatever butters his muffin.
Just because he's damp doesn't mean he's not president.
I'm just thinking of what kind of actions that we could take as people to move forward.
Oh,
here.
I see. Now you're asking an important and serious question, and I'm not honoring that importance. I believe, and this is a philosophical rather than maybe so practical, but what it is you can never tell when the point of change is going to take place. So you have to constantly be probing and pushing and demonstrating and complaining and even sacrificing until that moment comes. Because it always comes, but you never know when. Do you follow me?
I do.
Yeah, so the politically correct, the morally correct behavior is to make...
Oh,
we lost him. But to make trouble.
Yeah, agreed.
Okay.
There is
trouble. I want to be careful here. We're on the radio.
Okay. There is a lot to be said for making trouble. And really, from what I understand, from what I read from other activists on the internet and elsewhere, is the best way to do that is to pick up the phone. If phone lines are jammed at congressional offices with people who are pissed off,
yeah,
that makes people sit up and take notice.
Unfortunately, it's not as much fun as getting out in the street and pointlessly fighting police.
Yeah, agreed. And it's a little healthier for your body
to be out there.
Well, no, getting I don't recommend getting beaten up by police as a
no. They have healthy activity. Too many weapons. It doesn't make sense.
But there is the possibility that if enough public opinion can be marshaled and expressed in sufficient volume to make the Republican power establishment realize that Trump's presidency is untenable. He could be pressured to resign, but given my armchair assessment of his personality, I don't think that's likely.
He's psychotic.
He's infallible.
He's infallible. He's crazy. He's opportunistic. He's petty. He has every bad thing about him: sexism, racism, etc.
Right. So while I do want to get into in a little more detail Trump's budget and the GOP's health care plan, I feel like we can't let this go by without talking about those hearings yesterday.
Bizarre.
Really, really strange.
Yeah. Yeah.
A couple things of particular note happened. First of all, FBI Director James Comey. Now, before we get into what Comey said yesterday, let's talk again about what Comey said during the campaign.
Wasn't very helpful.
No.
As wasn't
if,
neutral.
If you recall, a few weeks before the election, James Comey wrote a letter to Congress about the Hillary Clinton email investigation. This letter was widely interpreted and even broadcast on a whole bunch of mainstream news sources as indicating that an investigation into Secretary Clinton's emails had been reopened. Of course, it was nothing of the kind. There was no new evidence, nothing new.
She didn't do anything wrong except make a mistake.
Right.
Which happens.
Right. And it led close political observers and a whole lot more people besides to speculate that perhaps Comey's motivation, considering the timing of that letter and the fact that it really ended up saying nothing at all, it was designed to reinforce a broad negative perception of Secretary Clinton in the weeks leading up to the election.
Right.
And it's why we may never know this conclusively, entirely possible that his action was sufficient in addition to all of the other negative things lining up against Secretary Clinton to push the election to Trump's favor.
Yeah, not to mention, and really an important aspect, I'm sorry to say, but it seems true, is basically a deep abiding sexism among American middle and working class white men.
And indeed, yeah. The only two demographic groups, and this bears repeating, that enjoyed majority support for Donald Trump, who displayed majority support, were white people, men and women, both.
Mm.
The only demographic groups to give him majority support. And it's entirely possible that James Comey's letter was enough to tip white voters in certain swing states over to Trump.
And she made she and her team made a terrible tactical error in not going to those upper Midwest working class communities.
Yes. And before you call up and complain that we are letting her off the hook, let's just stipulate that she was not the best candidate, that she came into the election with a lot of baggage, and that she left much to be desired in the minds of progressives.
And she tried to dance, which didn't work.
Yes. She was not the greatest candidate. She enjoyed a whole lot of negative attention from the public going into the election. But she also had to contend with the freaking director of the FBI pulling this sort of shenanigan leading into the election.
We still don't quite understand what that was about.
Yeah, it was very, very strange. And here he is still in his job, which is a bit of an eyebrow raiser as well. So anyway, Comey goes before Congress yesterday. And a couple of things of note occurred. He explained very patiently to the Republican members of the committee that no, President Obama could not have and did not order the wiretapping of Trump Tower prior to the election. And secondly, he revealed, as we mentioned earlier in the show, that Donald Trump and certain members of his campaign have been under FBI investigation since July.
We were saying scrutiny. We use the word scrutiny. It sounds
cool. No, investigation.
Oh, okay.
There is an ongoing federal investigation into whether the president of the United States colluded with a foreign power to influence the outcome of an American election.
What about the emoluments
clause? Yeah. That's a different issue
whole
entirely.
Whole other issue.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really pick your intolerable and untenable issues with this president.
Yeah.
Let's go back to the phones.
Okay.
Michael, good morning.
Good morning, guys. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Abe, I want to take you to task for a remark you tossed off right at the beginning of the show.
I'm not surprised. Go ahead.
No. You talked about Chuck Berry, who just died.
No, I talked about Chuck Berry.
Well, we both talked about Chuck Berry.
You both talked about Chuck.
I think we can agree. Even you will agree. Chuck Berry, great man.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay,
absolutely.
Now go ahead. I just want to, you know.
And then Abe tossed off this remark about how rock and roll was, quote, cultural appropriation, unquote.
I said in effect that. I didn't use that exact language, but yes.
Okay. Anyways, you said in effect that. I thought that was what you said, but okay, no problem. Anyways, that remark is like case A in why do lots of people hate political correctness? Because it's saying...
Really? The appropriation of rock and roll is at the top of that list?
Yes, because as an example, because you take all these guys like Keith Richard, Jerry Garcia, Eric Clapton, and Carlos Santana.
Wait a minute, Jimmy Carlos Hendrix. Santana's in that list? I thought you were going for white guitarists there.
No, what I'm going for is all these people who heard what Chuck Berry invented and fell in love with it and thought, geez, that's great stuff. I want to see what I can do with that stuff. Mm-hmm. Abe is implying that they did something wrong by doing that.
No, I don't think that they did do anything wrong by doing that.
But you did refer to that concept of cultural appropriation.
I did.
And well, but yes. Music belongs to everybody. It has no race. It has no class. It has no sex. Come
I'm
on.
Just giving credit it's where music. It's due. Well, I think that
so
rock and roll.
All those people I just mentioned. No, nobody tried to say, I invented rock and roll and Chuck Berry had nothing to do with it. There's a video you can find online of the Rolling Stones going to a club where Muddy Waters was playing and jamming with him, and the respect and the love there is just obvious. So
right.
For you to cast this negative shade on these people who just fell in love with rock and roll and went and did it themselves.
Yeah, I think you're missing my point,
it's
Michael.
Just nuts.
But I can okay. I think you're missing my point. I think the making of rock and roll music by lots and lots of white people, yes, was, I agree, a fundamental act of appreciation and of love. Absolutely. What I was trying to point out.
You can say it's appropriation in that it made money for people and it locked out effectively persons of color.
I was pointing
that's
out
about all
that,
you can say.
That Chuck Berry, perhaps more than any other single individual, can be credited with establishing the genre. And I'm also pointing out that rock and roll, as we understand it, arose directly out of African-American musical tradition. Now, when I talk about appropriation, however, it is true. What you said is true. A lot of it is done lovingly and with a great sense of appreciation and reverence. However, you also look at people like Pat Boone, who was able to record and commercially profit from songs written by African-American artists who were either denied the opportunity to record those songs for a major label or were denied the opportunity to have their music played on the radio for white audiences. Now, that's a more pernicious form of appropriation. Wouldn't you agree?
Well, I just think that referring to the whole enterprise of rock as appropriation
okay.
is just casting that negative shade way too wide.
So, so noted.
I wonder why many people dislike political correctness. There's a saying that goes around these days that goes, social justice warriors ruin everything, and that's the kind of thing they mean.
Who says that?
You don't read the kind of thing.
Yeah, I've never heard that before.
Well, you've heard it now.
Okay. Hey, thanks for the call, Michael. Bye-bye. Who's next? Harvey, good morning.
Hi there. Well, I have a simple thought. I'm sure it's not original, but boycott everything Trump. There's a grocer on the East Coast called Wegmans, and they he had a line of wine that they got rid of. And in America, it's all about the money and set up websites that identify all the Trump-owned entities out there. And we can vote with our dollars and boycott everything Trump.
That's a good idea. Is there such a website?
I don't know.
Okay, that's
but,
a good question.
But maybe like Greenpeace or a variety or Sierra Club. Or
so you're saying hurt him in the money where his otherwise sexual organs lie.
That's what he's doing to us. By slashing social programs, he's taking money away from us.
Yeah, but are Trump-branded enterprises, are those things that most Americans consume? I don't think most people can afford to stay in a Trump hotel, can they?
Well, I think he has his finger in a lot of stuff.
Okay, I don't like where we're going. I'm sorry. Go ahead, man.
But I feel that this is one way that we can all be effective by using our dollars to do to him what he's doing to us.
Well, I think it's one of many very important things to do. I think hurting him economically, or at least creating a frightening appearance of hurting him economically, since he's such a sensitive soul, is probably a good idea.
Yeah.
There
you go.
So thanks.
Hey, thanks very much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Christopher writes into the Facebook page, facebook.com/Abe and Joe, to note, latest Gallup poll has Trump at 39% approval, and the GOP Congress is even lower. And the specifics of conservative GOP ideology are proposed and threaten to become law. The majority of Americans react with horror Because of this and the fact that Trump was a distant second place in the popular vote, it's unlikely that he will ever gain the approval of a majority of Americans. So my fear is that Trump will start new and even bigger wars to distract from the unpopularity of GOP policies. Sadly, it's a strategy that worked well enough for W to get a second term. Sometime next year, just before the midterm election, bombs will undoubtedly fall on somebody somewhere in bigly quantity.
No, and I agree with that. And I think it's Iran.
I think that's, you know, if I were a betting man,
which is such a nice place, actually.
Yeah,
I don't think its government is a nice government. Let's be clear.
Or Syria.
Syria certainly needs bombing.
Oh, it certainly does.
Oh, yeah.
But here's what keeps me up at night about Donald Trump. I fear the reaction to another terrorist attack on the scale of the September 11th, 2001,
which he's setting up the arguments for.
Well, it's sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. That's what I fear. I mean, if you thought the backlash after 9/11 was bad, just imagine what this president might be capable of doing.
Well,
Have a nice day, everyone.
I think the thing that everyone needs to understand, whatever his political views, which are fascist and so on, but whatever that is, he is fundamentally insane. And that is something people have a hard time wrapping their heads around. I don't know why. He's president. He can't be insane, but he is insane.
That's your layman's opinion.
No. I come out of a very carefully trained professional background. I spent some time working on healthcare delivery systems. And mm-hmm. I think I can reasonably and professionally say he's insane.
So you have a degree in psychology then?
No, I have a
PhD. Or in psychiatry?
I have a PhD in history, and I have an MA in sociology, and I spent 2 years working for the Kaiser Research Foundation on a federal grant, and during that period of time, I did a lot of research, including an article, probably the only published article I have, showing that using an intervention of psychiatry does not reduce general health care utilization, since you brought it up.
I did, yeah. I just been wary of diagnosing people from a distance.
Oh, I in America?
Yes.
Please.
Yes. Unfortunately, with our healthcare system, sometimes that's the only diagnosis
that's
someone can get.
As close as you're going to get.
That's right. Oh, that guy over there, he's sick. Okay. Who's next? John, good morning.
Hi. It seems like my case has been explored about starting a war to save somebody's, credibility.
Bacon?
Yeah, bacon. Well, I was a World War II documentary buff, and you know the whole thing about when Hitler went into Poland in 1939, everybody was really surprised about it, and I didn't really know this until recently that there were like 15 attempts on Adolf's life before 1939.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and after he was elected, his headquarters was bombed out, and he just missed it by seconds. So there was all kinds of things going on. Maybe, you know, we can see that, you know, like history might repeat itself, that this, what they call the deep state, they might take out Trump.
You mean just deciding he's more of a nuisance than a value?
Yeah, well, in the background, I think it's always going to be Pence and Bryan. Because every time I see them together behind Trump, I see a fork in the spoon. You know, they're just about to eat him. They're just ready for it. That's just my whole thing. Because, you know, political assassinations and stuff like that have been going on since the Caesars. So,
I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, before that. But, I mean, documented. You know, since the Ides of March have just, you know, passed us. I just see that I think that his own party is... You know, I mean, some parts of it are out to get him.
Well, that may well be it. I want to remark on the fact that both political parties in America have moved away from any meaningful approach to governance in general. I mean, the Republicans, my father used to say that the Republicans bunch the money and the Democrats give us wars. Well, that hasn't been true since his observation in the late 40s.
Well, I'm just kind of giving a little bit of a hint that, you know, these Republican politicians, when they have town meetings, people are starting to throw rotten tomatoes at them. You know, euphemistically, that is.
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah, it is euphemistic.
Yeah, but I mean, his base and stuff are now finding out what he's really about.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I don't want to turn this conversation away from Trump, but I have to remark that that beginning really with Reagan and also most notably with the administration of the dirty dress guy, essentially has been a betrayal of the tradition that was established by FDR and Truman, which was a strong support for organized labor and for working people.
Well, what I'm scared of, that they're talking about options on the table about Korea, and that's what really scares me.
Yeah.
Because we already have everything in place. It's just a matter of, you know, the green light.
Well, right, and there, too, a crazy guy's in charge.
Yeah, I know. So I think this is worse than any kind of 911 scenario.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but anyway, thanks for your time.
Hey, thanks for the call.
Yeah.
All right, 503-231-8187 is the number to call. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Program on KBOO 90.7 FM. You know what? If you haven't been a member of KBOO, if you're not a member now, if you are a member now, we need your
give us money. We need money.
I mean, I don't know if there's ever been a more important time for what we do on this show.
Actually, you're making an important point. If you really are concerned about the direction of the nation, having mass media at some level or as many levels as possible repeating what needs to be said, and that it's MSNBC, it's CNN, it's a lot of things, but we particularly reach an audience of people who are willing to get out in the street about it. So if you care, and I think a lot of you do, or you wouldn't be listening to our dumb talk. If you care, you need to make a contribution to this station more than you normally do. And if you haven't ever, come on.
Here's just a sampling of what's coming up this morning on KBOO. At 9 on alternative radio, Laura Secor outlines the contemporary history of the U.S.'s relationship with Iran. From the Shah's ouster in 1979 to Trump.
The Shah we created.
Right. to Trump calling Iran the number one terror state. Look at what's happening today in this nation of 80 million people. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11 on stage and studio, D. May Roberts talks to creators of the Oregon Children's Theater's new production of Tomas and the Library Lady.
You know, we haven't done anything with what's been happening with the Children's Theater and struggling within the neighborhood in Northwest Portland. No. We'll do that another time.
Okay. This play promotes literacy based on the true story of Mexican-American Tomas Rivera, the Chancellor of University of California, Riverside. And at 11:30, Art Focus presents artist and writer Melanie Stevens, the creator of the webcomic and graphic novel Black Picket Fences. Now, I have not read this, but I've heard nothing but good things about it.
I have not. I don't know.
I'm going to have to break that out and read it. And tonight at 5 on the KBOO Evening News, we'll introduce you to Imperfect Produce and their mission to find homes for ugly fruits and vegetables.
Oh, yeah, I think that's a very cool and important thing, actually.
Yeah, right. You know, because the ugly fruits taste just as good as the pretty ones.
Yeah, but they're ugly.
I know, but so many of them get thrown out. It's staggering.
Well, we waste, I can't remember, a huge percentage of the food production.
Yeah, it's
and it's terrible.
Tragic.
Especially when there's a lot of people going hungry.
All right. And also tonight on the KBOO Evening News, a report from the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Out of Oregon rally and Portland Public Schools elections hold their first debate. All this coming up tonight at 5 and all the other stuff coming up this morning on KBOO.
And the best in music. I always like to say that.
That's true.
KBOO really has good music programming.
All right. Rebecca writes into the Facebook page, facebook.com/Abe and Joe, to say, in response to the caller regarding boycotting Trump products and interests, there is a movement started by Shannon Coulter called Grab Your Wallet with the associated hashtag Grab Your Wallet. The website is grab-your-wallet.com. Grab-your-wallet.com. So if you're interested in boycotting Trump's brands, I guess that's a good place
to
start. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Let's go back to the phones. Jan, good morning.
Good morning. You know, I feel like I've been waiting a long time, and you talk about how dumb your show is. I guess, I'm sorry to say I agree, because you're appropriating the airwaves and egocentric way to brag about your background in this, that, and 14 other things, and then to not say anything about the DNC appropriating the election away from Bernie. We had a really solid candidate sweep Bernie under the rug.
We've talked about that in great detail
on this program. To take it into the BS grinder about Hillary, and she's also having a background as a war hawk. I think that it just seems like you're likely to cut me off and throw me under the bus when I bring up these points.
Well, we might cut you off, but we'll never throw you under the bus.
No, you're of course we welcome your opinion.
Of course, it's not a the point being that you're trying to give so much credibility to Hillary and not even have any peep about what the DNC did
no,
to
No, see, that's
Bernie.
Where I disagree. If you're a longtime listener of the show, you know that we've...
I'm talking about now.
Talking about right now?
Maybe back then. I'm talking about now. Where are you going from now forward is to give a credible, intelligent purview of what's happened until now is part of bragging about being so, like, let's get rid of Trump. We're so scared of him when we all put him in place because of what we did to Bernie.
No, we didn't all put him in place. Let's be very clear about that.
You didn't, I'm sure you didn't have a role in putting Bernie in place. That is to say...
Trump in place.
Putting Trump in place, pardon me.
I did have a role in trying to put Bernie in place, and I think we need to remember that because we had a bona fide candidate, and I think that you're kind of hum, laughing about him and
what?
Kind of bragging
Where
about
Where are we laughing?
Wait a minute. That is baseless.
And now you're getting a little defensive with me, so...
No, I'm getting a lot defensive with you because you're accusing us of things that aren't true. Oh, looks like she hung up.
Did she hang up?
Yeah, but we didn't.
Oh, okay,
we didn't
I just wanted to establish that All she, right. not we, hung up.
All right.
Because I'm getting a little defensive myself.
Yes. All right, who's next? Theodore, good morning, sir.
Yeah, you know, listen to you two guys. Joe's the more sane one, but, you know, it's just a rehash of MSNBC.
Oh, no. Oh, no. No, I will not allow that to stand. That is not true.
That's all this show is. So,
why do you listen then?
If MSNBC, then I'd give my cable money to them. Why would I give it to KABU?
Well, you understand that NBC is NBC, and that whatever else it is, it is not independent, and it's controlled by vast sums of money. You do understand that, right?
The reason that I called in, my main point before I made that attack, is
okay.
that they're in a federal lawsuit down in Arizona.
Who is?
You guys are in a fake news environment, and you're repeating it in a federal lawsuit against Joe Arpaio in Arizona. There was a bunch of declassified stuff, and that's. Basically showing that the Trump family has been under surveillance for 15 or 20 years. You know about that?
No.
Well, you're not going to hear it on MSNBC. That's what I'm telling you. You got a single source.
I don't think we have a single source.
I think
we may not be radical enough for your tastes, or you may think we're missing stuff. That's entirely possible and may be true. But I really don't think MSNBC drives us.
Here's my underlying thesis, and that is that you're just parroting the fake news. And there are wiretapping documents out there. Somebody just produced 600 million pages of stuff. And I'm not just talking about the WikiLeaks stuff. And the Trump family's been under surveillance for decades. So why, if there's anything there, why would... Stone or Manafort or Trump, knowing that they are under surveillance, why would they do anything stupid? Because there's nothing there.
I'm not following you. I don't follow you. You're saying with all this investigation, nobody's come up with any evidence to indicate that Trump is a crook. And I would disagree with that. You're saying also that somehow, and you're using a term of the Trump world, fake news. Don't yell. Let me finish. Fake news. Now go ahead.
Joe, if you've got evidence of an indictable offense, then I suggest that you go to an attorney He will write you a referral to the FBI.
Oh, my God. I would not go to the FBI if my mommy depended on it.
And then they will go investigate, and they will indict. You just have to go to the U.S. attorney and the FBI. But, Joe, you don't got anything. I'm a Trump supporter.
I would never have guessed that.
Yeah, no kidding. But anyway, you guys ought to get off the MSNBC. You'll be more informed, and you can't believe this fake news.
All right, well,
you can't repeat it.
What would you recommend as an alternative to MSNBC?
How about a balanced diet of, how about a little bit of Fox? How about a little bit of Alex Jones?
Come on, man.
Alex Jones? You're offering Alex Jones to counterbalance MSNBC that neither of us watch.
I don't even
know. All right, thank you for the call.
Thanks for the call.
Bye-bye. What?
What is all that?
I don't know what that is.
And the term fake news is like a giveaway. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I think I'm just not going to comment.
All right. Juan is next. Good morning.
Hey, guys. I'm mad at you, too, but I'm going to be a lot nicer.
Okay. I appreciate nice. Nice is good.
Hey, so look, you guys, would you be happy if Hillary was president?
Would I be happy?
Happy? Yeah. No.
I mean, do you think everything would be pretty much copacetic and we'd be on the right track and everything would be good?
No.
Okay. No. But I'd say that relative to what we've got now, we'd be in better shape.
I think it's a little bit scary to have a criminal psychotic operating as president of the United States, opposed to Hillary. Let me finish. As opposed to Hillary, who may not be my candidate, and she may not be the right person, but the fact of the matter is, she ain't crazy.
Okay, let me ask you another question.
Okay.
Based on the fact that we're going to have what is going to be the fourth or fifth year hottest on record in a row, and the ice caps are melting in January, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
How far can we go down the road where, well, this one isn't as bad as the other one would have been?
I
don't think we have a whole lot of time left to start fixing things.
Well, that's true. Yeah, but I'm not understanding the gist of your question.
Well, what I'm saying is, you guys seem to think you make it a black or white. It would have been a lot better had it been Hillary. We just got to get this guy out. And what I'm terrified of is that if this guy gets knocked out, we just stop. Because we weren't doing much when Obama was screwing things up.
Wait a minute. First of all, I mean, I have to sort of try to deconstruct what you're saying. Obama's main fault was politesse. His idea of a strategy of reasonableness. And I don't believe he had a left-wing perspective. These are the two things that are disturbing him.
Okay, yeah, but if you start out with the thing, he was too nice. And then you slip in later on that his politics were basically Republican.
I actually think that the party designations are only, in my mind, for convenience and because the Republicans have gotten so weird.
Okay, let's say Eisenhower Republican.
All right, well, let me throw another perspective at things here, Juan. Let me ask you this question then. Let's pretend the Secretary Clinton is now the President of the United States. Would there be any danger of this horrific healthcare law being signed or healthcare bill being signed into law?
Okay, the question is, do they have the numbers to override the veto? Yeah, she would veto it. Well, let me ask you a question now. If she were elected, would there be a no-fly zone in Syria, and would we be shooting at the Russians?
I don't know the answer to that.
And
probably, yes, we would.
Here's another question. Wait. We're saying, the big Democratic meme right now is, he's in league with the Russians, he's in league with the Russians. She ran a foundation. She was part of a foundation, had her name on it, that was taking money from countries where, as Secretary of State, she had to sign off on arms deals.
All right? It was a pay-to-play thing. Now, I didn't check this out, but I heard that after the election, they cut staff at the Clinton Foundation because nobody was paying to play anymore.
All right. Nobody is arguing that she was a perfect candidate. Nobody's arguing that she would be a panacea were she in the White House. What I'm wondering, Juan, is that empirically, you can't tell me that she would be worse, that we would be in a worse position
if she were in the White House right now. I addressed this with Joe. She wouldn't be worse, but she'd still be bad, and we can't afford bad anymore.
We can't afford bad anymore, Juan. Nobody's arguing that.
We actually have to have somebody now that's going to start taking us in the right direction.
What I'm arguing in this whole scenario here is that Secretary Clinton as president would be preferable to the gargantuan tire fire that is President Trump. Can we agree on that? Maybe we can't.
I'll say she wouldn't be as bad as Trump, and I'll say we would be getting closer to climate change that was going to make life on this planet pretty freaking harsh.
Well, I think...
We would be closer to that?
Well, wait a minute. We're getting into some kind of speculative world that I don't even understand. Here's for me, I'm only speaking for myself. When you have a psychotic crook as president of the United States, it's not a good thing. Okay?
Yeah, absolutely. And the reason that he put the people in the cabinet that he put, this guy's, they're going for broke. Whatever money is behind him, whether it's Koch brothers and his other billionaire pals, you know, I don't know who their names are, but you know that they're all in this together. This guy, you know, you talked about the public lands. These guys are now going to harvest the United States.
Oh, no question about that. You and I and Abe, I think, agree on that tragedy. That is something we're looking at. And I personally am very upset, very disappointed, and wish more and more Americans would really realize what's at stake and would get active in both the legitimate calling and arguing and so on, and in the streets.
So let's get some good candidates and let's put them in office.
Okay, I think we all agree.
And you know what? We can't do it with the Democratic Party. We need a new party. They did it in 1858 or whatever the hell year it was. We need to do it again.
All right. I'm looking forward to your candidacy for local office. Thank you for the call.
Oh, you'll vote for me?
Possibly.
Very possible. Depends on what you say.
Yeah. Thanks for the call. Can we just take a breath?
Well, I think it's interesting. All the people who hate us or hate what we say or something are coming out of the woodwork. I'll bet there's a lot of them out there.
Yeah, it's good. It keeps us from getting complacent.
It could be a mob that could lynch us. Yeah. Hey, this is exciting.
But Juan made a number of salient points, but one in particular, when he said the people that Trump has appointed to his cabinet are going to harvest the United States. And I think that is.
Well, I think that's correct.
That's not only a clever turn of phrase, but I think pretty accurate.
Yeah.
Especially when you consider that the federal agencies who are cut the deepest by Trump's budget,
so-called budget,
the Environmental Protection Agency at a 31.4% reduction. Interestingly enough, another bill introduced by Republicans in Congress is a very simple piece of legislation. It says that the Environmental Protection Agency shall terminate on December 31st, 2018.
That's cool.
Yeah. Also, the Department of Labor is cut by nearly 21%. And there are a whole bunch of agencies which are eliminated entirely, including the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Including such regional environmental authorities as the Appalachian Regional Commission, such things as the National Endowment for the Arts, the National Endowment
for the Humanities.
And we
don't need no damn arts.
No. And on and on and on. So when I said earlier that Trump's priorities, and indeed, as Juan pointed out quite accurately, I think, the priorities of his cabinet are to dismember, harvest, and sell off the United States of America, its public lands, its people, everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's just so obvious, it's undeniable.
It is undeniable. So the question really becomes, rather than splitting hairs over the degree of awfulness that we would be participating in under a President Hillary Clinton, perhaps it's better to ask, Are we content as citizens of a once proud republic to see it run into the ground by a crazy man? There, I said it. A crazy man.
No, you think you said it. I said it first.
I know you said
it. I'm first. I'm always first.
Yeah.
I can call a crazy when I see one because I have a PhD.
That's true. Let's go to John.
John. Sorry, I thought that was fun.
Good morning, sir.
All right.
Good morning. I always enjoy your show, no matter how bad it goes.
Thanks, I guess.
I want to make a book recommendation, and then I'll make a political point.
Okay.
The book is called People of the Lie by M. Scott Peck, who wrote The Road Less Traveled. He was a psychiatrist who, in this book, is describing narcissistic people he ran across in his practice, and it's a very interesting book. Mm-hmm. And being called People of the Lie is kind of interesting. It's basically getting to the heart of their problem. They lie about everything, and so it kind of comes out in Donald Trump's actions and words. So that book is very fascinating, and I won't.
Well, thank you. I don't know the book, but I appreciate your suggestion.
Well, it's out of print. You'd have to get a used copy.
That's why I don't know the book. Right. Sorry, man. Go ahead.
Okay. The other thing I wanted to say, I called in a while ago and made the statement that I was kind of mad at Bernie for completely ignoring Jill Stein when she reached out to him. And I still think it would be a very it would have been a really interesting three-way race to the White House if he'd reached out to her and put her in the presidential slot. And because she's so eloquent, it would have been a whole different ballgame.
Well, I don't want to get into dialogue about the advantages or disadvantages of Jill Stein. I will say, and I want to go back to the Bernie thing. Yes, Bernie probably even would have won the presidency, and the Democratic Party machine did, in fact, treat him very badly. I just wanted to establish that. I don't think either Abe or I are unaware of that.
No, I totally agree. But I don't think Bernie by himself, he needed somebody special like Jill Stein, and he could have either been in the White House, in the Oval Office, or... that would have been my preference, Jill Stein in the White House.
Well, and just in terms of strategy, not evaluating candidates' qualities, historically, the only times what would be called nowadays a third-party candidate have had a chance was when the two-party system broke down or broke up. That was why Lincoln could get elected president.
Exactly.
So, you know, and you know that. So that's just a fact of the power of the system as created. And, of course, if you read the Constitution, you realize that really it's a document designed of, by, and for the wealthy. And it's racist, and it's sexist, and it's all these other things. But that also is a reflection of a time where progressivism was a very limited phenomenon.
And going back to the narcissism thing for one second.
Sure.
The reason so many people voted for him, and you can be rich or poor and be a narcissist.
Well, it's a cross-cultural phenomenon, in fact.
So many people voted for him because the subject, I guess the discussion or investigation of selfishness, which is just another word for narcissism, is like not there anymore. So everybody's voting for this crazy guy because they don't realize how crazy they are themselves.
I actually don't think that's quite fair. I think one of the biggest problems in our society is that there's no actual acknowledgement of the class structure. And another part of the problem is that our educational system, particularly in the area of the social sciences and more particularly in the area of history, teaches a lot of basically lies.
Yeah.
So, you know, it makes a problem. You're coming up and you're learning silly stuff or untrue stuff.
Exactly. Well,
you know, that's bad. It doesn't help.
You hit the head on the nail. I've got a neighbor who's really narcissistic, but she also watches the crazy right-wing fundamentalist stuff. And so it just reinforces her ignorance. Hmm. Anyway, I'll call us that.
Okay.
Have a great day.
Hey, thanks for the call.
Bye-bye.
Leslie, you're next.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Going back to your caller who had been shrieking about Donald Trump being under surveillance. Yes, he was under surveillance. Democracy Now! with the interview with David K. Johnston, the making of Donald Trump, Trump's ties to the mob and drug traffickers. Trump had a pilot of his personal plane who had been a drug trafficker. Trump was had the mafia in deals for his construction. So, yeah, it would seem like the FBI and NYPD probably would have had pretty good reasons to investigate him.
If they'd wanted
to. Here's another quote from the article. Donald Trump's father had a business partner who was a mob guy. Let me see. It's a pretty long article.
No, I was going to say, it's going to be very long, and there's a lot of reason and a lot of evidence that the Trumps and Trump, both the father and the son, were engaged in business with a lot of creepy elements. But I just want to point out one thing. When you talk about New York construction, you're talking about an area that has, for a long, long time, been riddled with mob connections. Just
and
to be fair.
His mob involvement in New Jersey. In terms
another
of
state where
gambling,
that's normative.
Yeah. In terms of his gambling empire there. And also, another fact that isn't brought up is his sister is a judge. So he had links to the judicial structure inside of New York that also managed to divert any prosecutions. So, yeah, he should have been under surveillance.
Yeah, I think we can agree on that. Hey, thank you very much for the call. Appreciate it. Annie, you're next.
Let me take you off speaker.
Okay.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm disappointed. You started out with two very pertinent topics.
Uh-huh.
You were going to discuss the hearings yesterday.
Uh-huh.
You were going to line out your view, recent arguments, bring in things that may not have been in the newspapers or on the general news, as you always do.
Uh-huh.
And your conversation has degenerated into a replay of who woulda, shoulda, coulda won the election, dominated by people whose eyes rotate in opposite directions. And I'm disappointed. I'd hoped for
Listen, I think your criticism is valid.
I gotta write that down.
I think your criticism is valid, but part of the contradiction that we face is that we want to give opportunity to our listeners, and sometimes that goes in ways that we would possibly be less comfortable with than if it went a different way. But I think you're pointing out something about the process of radio, and your call is one of the efforts that I think is important because it's trying to straighten it out.
This has one thing to do with why you get so few women callers.
Hmm. Really?
The contentiousness itself has in past caused me to turn my radio off and go do something else.
Well, that's a good criticism, but on the other hand, what would it be if we were simply preaching to the choir?
Valid, reasoned discourse on opposite sides is fine. Crazy, not so much.
Okay. So you're saying we let things get a little out of hand.
There
today.
You go. I actually liked your little timer.
Oh, the three-minute timer?
We should go back to that?
Well, one of those guys went on way too long.
Okay.
Repeating his point, if it could be called that.
Yes. No, I think that particularly is a good practical criticism. And if we can do it, I think we might do that.
All right.
Do you think we might do that?
Yeah, and I appreciate your insight.
You do topic of the hearing things another time? Because I really wanted to hear what you had to say on that.
All right. And, I accept your criticism. Civility matters, I think.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for the call. Actually, really, thank you for the call. And, Abe, are you willing to do this other thing again?
This topic again?
Yeah.
I think it's...
Well, I think it'll be a topic next week.
It'll be an ongoing
week.
Topic.
Because
yeah.
I think that even the normal capitalist endeavor
mm-hmm.
is now under threat because there's a crazy man in the White House.
Agreed. And, I've encountered this in my conversations in my private life as well. When I bring up the notion about the president colluding with Russia, the response I often get from progressives is as if I'm somehow trying to dodge the fact that Secretary Clinton was a flawed candidate and with many contradictions.
Well, it's
and,
irrelevant now.
Well, no, it's not. But pointing out that Trump colluded with the Russians, that's not a dodge. It's important and it deserves to be talked about because, to my knowledge, it is without precedent. It is that unusual. It is that strange. And it is that potentially corrosive to our admittedly already corroded electoral system.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I think this is unprecedentedly weird.
It is. May you live in interesting times.
That's a curse, you know.
Yeah, I know.
Chinese curse, I believe.
We've got Blake hanging on the line. Blake, if you can make it fast, we can get you in.
Okay, I'll give it a shot here. I wanted to follow up with the earlier comment about the concern that Trump might start a crazy war somewhere. I don't know if you've ever compared the list of wars that George Bush started.
It's quite a list.
Well, have you compared that to the conflicts that Barack Obama got started?
Yes.
This is longer.
Well, look, now you're going into a question of the structural interests of the imperialist nation state of the United States.
Whose list is longer? Barack Obama's, the last time I checked, stood at 7.
Who did more lasting damage to the United States domestically and internationally?
Oh, we're out of all of you. All right, we're out of time. Yeah. I really appreciate the criticism. I find the show, when this sort of thing happens, kind of amusing and I think entertaining, but apparently it's frustrating for quite a few of you.
All right, we'll be back at you next week. Thanks for listening. You gotta hear something that's really hot. With the one you love, you're making a man.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the closing celebration for Giving Back, the Soul of Philanthropy. On Thursday, March 23rd at 6 p.m. at Concordia University's library in Portland. This event celebrates months of learning, sharing, and growing through the Giving Back, the Soul of Philanthropy exhibit. The celebration will feature performances by Taja Williams and the Barramacona Drummers. Again, that's the closing celebration for Giving Back, the Soul of Philanthropy, March 23rd at 6 o'clock at the Concordia University's Library and Learning Center at 2800 Northeast Liberty Street in Portland. More information can be found at KB.